Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 46, May 1st, 2012. We talk about Contest University at the Dayton Hamvention. Hello, everybody. It's Ham Nation time, and I'm Bob Heil from Pleasant Hope, Missouri, our new second home. And I've had a wonderful week playing with rope and coax and connector. Wait a minute. I got to bring in my experts. Gordo, are you there? Gordon West, are you on board tonight?
Our whole team is here, and we've got solder. I don't know if we've got the soldering gun quite as large as yours, Bob, so we'll let you go ahead and do the PL on what is probably LMR 14,000.
I got to tell you, I've had there's somewhere around 2,000 feet of this stuff. And George Thomas from Mississippi, our good old smoke and solder guy. George, I need you here to help me. Which end of this barrel goes on here first?
You better slide the sleeve over there first, Bob, or you'll end up like I do a lot of times.
Yeah. Well, you did a great thing a few weeks ago showing us how to do that. I learned how to do that, you see. But anyway, I've put on, I don't know how much, how many, whatever. But all of this coax and wire. See, I have all these trees out here, and I had to do something. So I put in these guys, which allows me to bring the rope up into the tree. I didn't use any... None pulleys. I had a longtime mentor. Oh, we're talking about back in the 50s. Always remarked, don't use pulleys. So we don't. We use these guys. Put this around the limb of the tree. That's all encased in plastic. And then you take this wonderful Dacron rope and you put that little baby through here. And we have the best setup for pulling rope up into a tree. We're going to get into this. I'm making videos of this. And after Dayton, we'll all three of us get together and see if I did it right. But I've been having a lot of fun this week with this good old soldering iron because we got lots of big old coax connectors. And Gordo, I had to go out and get a bigger, 200 foot instead of a little 25 foot tape. So what can I tell you? But we're having fun. And the other thing that's really cool is Sarah's rose bushes are blooming like crazy. Look at this. So we're having a lot of fun out here in the old 5 acres, and hope that everybody is going to have a good time tonight here on Ham Nation. We got a really nice show for you, some great guests, and we'll get around to some of the other things later on. But we've got Tim Duffy here going to tell us about the Contest University that happens at Dayton. But before we get to Tim and some Boy Scout activities later on, Gordo, you got some real happenings that you and Don and Julian did with Clint. Let's switch out to Costa Mesa and let you guys show us what you've been doing.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Bob. And yep, that's Julian and Don that are keeping track of all that's going on. But, you know, we had a great day at a wonderful airport. I'm going to let Clint sort of set the stage before we come back to Julian and Don. So, Clint, welcome aboard to Ham Nation. Here's Clint, K6LCS.
Oh, good evening. Boy, a lot of preparation went into a very short radio contact held at Harupa Valley's Flabot Airport earlier this month. But, oh, what a conversation. So began the front page article in the Riverside Press Enterprise newspaper describing our project to communicate with flight engineer Donald Pettit via ham radio as he streaked across the sky aboard the International Space Station. Pettit was actually over Italy for our contact, so fellow ham Claudio, IK1SLD, was keying the mic, and our students' questions were relayed via a landline. Go to the Ham Nation wiki page for our website and more information on our project. And thanks to Don Arnold, W6GPS, and Julian, N3JF, the video we're about to see shows the class of students in action. Back to you, Gordo.
Okay. Thanks, Clint. And, you know, it was luckily that Don and Julian were in position to pull this off. Don, how about telling them where you were headed and that you dropped out of the airplane just for this one day big contact? Don Arnold.
Well, go ahead. Well, I was on my way to Fiji. I was working on a video project. And so I said, hey, if I'm going to go at least that far to the west, I might as well drop off and go see the west. So I got here, and he says, oh, by the way, we're going to go talk to the space station. And I said, oh, really? And so I had all my video equipment. I use a Panasonic camera here and a bunch of other stuff that I travel with. And so I hooked it all up and was able to just grab the video. Didn't have time to edit it, but I was really, really excited just even working there. But listening to the space station, talking to the students, and listening to the students' comments. So it was very, very exciting for me. But I just basically took the video out of my P2 cards and put them on a hard drive and gave them to Julian here and just said, here you go, do what you can. And then I was off to Fiji.
Wow. And Julian, so immediately we put Julian into the picture while Don is off to Fiji. Julian, a little editing job. What does it take to edit video? A little bit more than the home editing gear, huh?
Yeah, basically you're looking at a quite powerful computer and a good monitor and some good video and sound to go along with it. Unfortunately, I couldn't do it on the beach in Fiji like some other people, but so I was stuck at home in Orange County and tapping away on a computer keyboard.
Well, you did a great job. So, Clint, we're going to now turn it up to Alex. So, Alex, put on your Fiji hat, your space helmet, and let's roll that video of the International Space Station.
Hey, Clint, we got about a half hour before the big contact. Are you nervous?
There's a little nervousness in there, of course, but the kids are all prepared. Our audio visual is all prepared. It's just making sure that the technical telebridge occurs with Italy.
Wow. Now, how long have you been planning this contact?
Gordon, there's been 13 months of preparation behind the scenes, more than 2,900 email messages, several teleconferences with Johnson Space Control, and, of course, amateur radio operators all over the planet working to make this happen. But 13 months we've been working on this 10-minute radio contact.
Wow.
Good morning. Welcome to Flaybob Airport Preparatory Academy, where through the efforts of volunteer organizations like AMSAT, the ARRL, and the space agencies involved, our students will be discussing life aboard the ISS with an astronaut who is on board the International Space Station this morning. It has been 13 months of preparation for a 10-minute conversation, but the kids have been learning about space, about learning about our exploration of the heavens, and it's been a wonderful learning experience for not only the students, but also for the instructors and those amateur radio operators who are helping out. Okay. For our schedule, the ISS will not be over Riverside or Harupa Valley, California. It'll be over, actually, Italy. And Claudio is a radio amateur in Italy with a station set up to talk to the ISS for us. We'll be connecting through a telebridge, essentially a telephone tap, with Johnson Space Center in Houston on a teleconference to make this happen for our kids. These students are involved with the aviation school here at Flaybob. They had a contest in their classes for the best questions to submit to the ISS, and we have almost 20 students here who are shining examples of our future. Okay. We're going to have a marvelous hour here at Flaybob Airport. Here we go.
Oscar Romeo 4, India, Sierra Sierra. This is India Kilo 1, Sierra Lima Delta, Telebridge Station. Calling for a scheduled Aris contact. Do you copy, Don? Over.
That's the moment right there.
Okay, Don. Your signal is loud and clear.
We want to applaud, but of course we can't.
Good morning, Don. Today we are acting from Italy as a telebridge station for Flabob Airport Preparatory Academy, located in Riverside, California. Are you ready now for the first question, Don? Over.
This is Sean.
Poor Sean. Poor Sean.
And A1SF. Do you copy?
Okay, go ahead, sing.
All right, Sean asks about repositioning the ISS if the movement can be felt by the astronaut.
Can you feel the movement? Over.
When we change our altitude, we call that doing a reboot, and we lose about 100 meters per day due to atmospheric drag. And the level of acceleration is about 500 micro-g's. And if you're free-floating, you can't feel it, but you can see based on the wall moving around. Over.
All right. August asks about the recycling.
Tell us about the recycling in your waste management program.
A great answer here.
We have what we call a regenerative life support system where we condense the sweat breath from our bodies, and that goes back into our water reclaiming unit. We also recover about 70% of the water from our urine, and then that all goes back in to our galley system, and we use it to make dinner with. Over.
This is Josh. What was the last unexpected thing you've seen while on this mission? Over.
Interesting answer here.
The last
burning of plastic.
Really neat thing that I saw was a combustion experiment where we were burning spheres of plastic, polymethylmethacrylate, and we were trying to put the fire out once the fire got going, and I was amazed at how difficult it was to put the fire out. Over.
Kevin asks about the physical and medical testing to qualify to be an astronaut.
You basically need to have the same flight physical that you have for aviation, and a few more constraints on top of that. You can find out more information on the NASA website under astronaut selection. Over.
This is Gloriana.
Gloriana asks about any effects of air pollution. We have a little bad audio on the kids, but she's asking about air pollution.
It's really difficult to see air pollution from space. However, you can't see haze over cities, but then you can't distinguish whether that's just natural haze or whether that's air pollution. You can't see dust storms, particularly in the Middle East. You see these huge regional dust storms. But to distinguish whether it's air pollution, it cannot tell that from orbit. Over.
This is Brittany.
Brittany asks, besides missing her his family and friends, what's the biggest adjustment he's made? And there's a great answer here.
Adjustment you have made for this mission. Over.
The biggest adjustment for this mission is going 6 months without taking a bath. Over.
This is Blaine.
Blaine asks, what is the daily interaction among all crew members, no matter their country of origin? And an interesting answer also from Don Pettit.
All six of us interact with each other every single day, and we do experiments together. We'll share meals together. We'll do repairs together. And so currently we have three Russian crew members, a crew member from the Netherlands, European Space Agency, and two U.S. Astronauts. Over.
This is Nick.
Nick asks how often they have to reposition their orbit.
We reboost our orbit about once a month. And remember, we lose about 100 meters per day due to orbital drag. And so we boost our orbit a couple kilometers about every 3 to 4 weeks.
Cody's going to ask, what is the most exciting repair that Don Pettit has performed on the ISS?
The most exciting thing that I've done recently is look at seascape structures, which is a phenomenon involving chemical reactions and diffusion in a medium such as gelatin. Over.
Jonathan asks to please describe the feeling of liftoff.
Several hours before launch, and then it's quiet and a little bit on the hot side, and then all of a sudden there's a lot of shake and vibration, and you feel acceleration in one direction. Over.
Dorian asks, and the kids get better now. He asks, how do you send photographs to your family? And the kids' questions are okay from now on.
We use our high data rate radio system, which uses KU band, which is around 15 gigahertz, and goes through the Tigris satellite system, relays down to White Sands, New Mexico. And I can send JPEG images to my family, and they can send JPEG images to me. Over.
This is Cole. What is the effect of solar flares on You Are the ISS? Over.
Most solar flares do not affect crew health in any way because the Earth's magnetosphere still is protecting us. However, solar flares do make wonderful aurora displays so that we can look out the windows during nighttime passes and see aurora. Over.
This is Veronica. What are your hopes for the moon base in the future? Over.
Hello, is it WLFJ?
Little interference.
The United States can get a replacement rocket built for the space shuttle. And in the long term, I hope that we venture off away from planet Earth. First step going to the moon. And developing a lunar bank. Over.
Sean asks, how does the crew regulate their nutritional intake so they do not gain weight in a weightless environment? What a great question. Over. And there's a cool answer coming up.
On space station, we have the opposite trouble. We have to worry about losing weight, and we have to worry about losing a lot of weight. So we eat a lot of food up here to keep from weight. Over.
This is August.
August asks how the weightless environment affects his digestion.
The first order weightless environment has no effect on our digestion. Your body works just fine digesting food without gravity. However, it takes a while for your bathroom habits to return to normal when you first come up here because you do not have a gravity assist to help move fluids and solids out of your body. Over.
This is Josh. If there is only one thing that our audience remembers about your mission and the ISS, what would you want it to be? Over.
And unfortunately, we lost signal right there. Flight engineer Donald Pettit. His call sign is KD5MDT, born in 1955, married with two children, selected by NASA in 1996, more than 6 months in space, more than 13 EVA hours. He's on Expedition 30 right now, which launched December 21st. From Kazakhstan, and he's scheduled to return to Earth in just a couple of weeks. If you are interested in doing this for your school, NASA is accepting applications right now through July 2nd for contacts that will be scheduled beginning January 2013. Visit the Ham Nation wiki page for more information. Gordo, back to you.
All right. Well, thank you, Clint. That was terrific. And Alex, if you have the tail end of that video, that'll be a fine wrap up. If not, we will wrap it up at this end. And Don also, Clint, has something very special to show you. So, Clint, take a look at this. And viewers, this is Clint Bradford in the current issue of CQ Magazine, May issue, the Dayton Hamvention issue. And Clint, congratulations on a job well done. And we'll see a lot of you at the Dayton Hamvention. So the voiceovers were necessary because we had such an elaborate PA system that we didn't want to have any kids feeding back. So they were a little bit lower audio, but Clint did a great job. So that's why you heard Clint instead of the kids most of the time. And again, 100% contact. So we're going to turn this back to Bob Heil, but let me let Don say a few last words regarding the contact.
The kids made this happen. We're here all for the
Clay
Bob Airport Preparatory Academy.
Wow. Well, this has been great for Ham Radio. And any last words of wisdom?
I just want the kids, as I told them, to continue looking skyward and do not stop asking questions.
Oh, that is great. Well, thanks, Alex. Alex did a fabulous job up at the Twit studio. So, Don, back to you for a final.
I just want to say it's great being here on Ham Nation and looking forward to seeing all my buds there at Dayton having the annual
Trekkie. Thank you very much.
To go see everybody. And I'm looking forward to folks coming up to my booth up there at the North Hall. Just come to Gordon West, turn right, and I'm up there by the loading freight so I can get a GPS fix. Got some neat things to show around. So if you've got an ICOM, a Kenwood, or a D-Star, or a TinyTrac, or you think you want one of those things, you come to my booth and we'll set you straight on APRS and the AVMAP G6 APRS personal navigator.
All right. Well, thanks, Don. And Julian is going to be very busy. He's going to be the one with the camera this time while Don works the booth. Julian will be at the ICOM booth and all over the place. Right, Julian?
Absolutely. It's going to be a busy but fun time in Dayton. So come see us all.
All right. So, Clint, thanks again. You did a fabulous job. And all of the chat room, look at that. Those little hands are clapping back and forth. So, Bob Heil, K9EID, that is your ISS. Clint, over to you for a final. Clint, final words.
Just thank you much for your support, Gordon, and your support here in our ARRL region. And I already have two inquiries, one from Orange County, one from Hacienda Heights, from schools. Hey, Clint, you want to organize one of these again? Yeah, we'll do it again. Thank you very much for your support, guys. K6LCS.
All right. Now, Clint, wait. Just before you go, Clint, everybody wants to know over your shoulder, what is that neat little monitor showing your transmit waveform on Ham Nation? We want one.
Oh, well, you need to go to the wiki notes for Ham Nation this episode, and I'll put the plug-in for that little application. I apologize. It's not one of the ones that Bob showed a couple of weeks ago. It's a very adjustable, very configurable audio level meter on my iPod Touch 4th generation.
Wow, I love it. All right, well, thanks so much. Bob, back over to you. And from the Gordo House, we'll see everybody in the chat room at Dayton, Ohio in 2 weeks.
What a great job. Oh, my. And that was a lot of work. You guys, you just don't throw that thing up and get it to happening. So we applaud everybody and appreciate all the work that you did getting it together and doing it and all the editing that was involved. So thanks for bringing that in. And for all the viewers, if you're not aware about the ISS, almost every astronaut was a ham that went up from America, and many of the Russians and other countries, they're all amateur radio operators. And so we get a chance occasionally to have these kind of things happening, and Clint is the master at being able to get the school kids up there. So thanks very much, and we'll look forward to some more of that. We need to see what the news is right now, so let's go over to Don Wilbanks and see what's happening on Newsline. So Don, take it away.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1811, here are your Ham Nation headlines for Tuesday, May 1st, 2012. Japan plans to launch 16 educational satellites over the next 2 years. The tiny birds are currently under construction in Japan, with the first launch to take place May 17th, followed by the others in as rapid succession as possible. The first to be launched will be the amateur radio satellite Horyu-2, built by students at the Kyushu Institute of Technology. Its mission is to take pictures of the Earth using a small CMOS camera called SCAMP that was developed by the University of Surrey in the UK. The SCAMP camera takes a 640 by 480 pixel picture in the popular JPEG format. That means from 700 kilometers altitude, one pixel corresponds to 1.6 kilometers. Horyu-2 will be followed in July by the transport of several items to the International Space Station. This mission will deliver the Japanese Experiment Module Small Satellite Orbital Deployer, or GEM, along with the Japanese CubeSats WeWish, FitSat-1, and Reiko. These CubeSats should be deployed from the ISS in September using the GEM and the robot arm. FitSat-1 may be the most interesting of these. It will use a neodymium magnet for attitude control. It would also have multiple downlinks. These include CW on 437.250 MHz, AX.25 on 437.445 MHz, and a 4-watt high-speed data transmitter on 5840 MHz. The latter is capable of sending a 640 by 480 VGA JPEG image in 6 seconds. In addition to its other experiments, FITSAT-1 will also carry a set of high-power LEDs that will be driven by 100-watt pulses to produce extremely bright flashes. It's hoped it will be observable by the unaided eye or with small binoculars from the ground. Both the 5840 megahertz and optical downlinks have high power consumption, so it may be that they're only activated over Japan. In December, the Tsumabe satellite is planned to be launched on a Japanese H-2A booster. It will carry a CW beacon on 437.250 MHz and AX.25 packet at 1,200 and 9,600 bit per second telemetry on 437.505 MHz. The remaining satellites will be placed into orbit on subsequent flights. There's a lot of misinformation going around in amateur radio FM and repeater circles regarding an upcoming FCC mandate on narrow-banding communications in the 150 to 512 megahertz spectrum. Much of the misinformation regarding narrowband on amateur radio FM appears to be coming from hams who have purchased various low-cost Part 90 radios built in China. These radios are capable of narrowband operation on the 2-meter and 70-centimeter ham bands in addition to Part 90 frequencies. The manuals that come with these radios are written with Part 90 users in mind, and much of the material has no meaning to Part 97 amateur service operations. However, some hams don't realize this, and that's likely the way the erroneous rumors that ham radio FM and repeater operations at 70 centimeters and above would have to narrowband got started. To make it clear, ham radio is not affected in any way by this FCC edict, and your ham gear is not going to become obsolete. Eric Horwitz, KA1NCF, tells Newsline that there is need for more volunteer ham radio operators for this year's Boston, Massachusetts area project Bread Walk for Hunger. The walk takes place Sunday, May 6th, and is the 44th outing of the event. Horwitz says that they need people to provide communication support for the Project Bread staff and volunteers along the 20-mile route. If you'll be in the Boston area May 6th and are interested in helping out this year, go to www.mmra.org/WFH to log in and fill out the sign-up form. And the future of digital audio in VHF and UHF amateur radio is the subject of a video conversation between video producer Gary Pierce, KN4AQ, and expert Jeff Parker, WI1WXL, who works for Motorola Solutions. The video presents a discussion of alternative digital audio systems available today and what may be coming to ham radio in the very near future. You can see it online as Episode 7 of Gary's Ham Radio Now series. The URL is hamradionow.tv. And that'll do it from Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for nearly 35 years at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
All right. I love it. Don, you're the best. And we need to find out what's underneath that hat back there, that guitar. Someday you're going to have to take that out and play us some tunes. That'd be great. Dayton is special. Dayton is very special. To a lot of people, if you haven't been there, you just call it another ham fest. Well, no, it's not just a ham fest. It started out in about 53 or 54. Bob Drake of the Drake Manufacturing Company that built all the great Drake equipment, he and some of the guys at DARA got this idea to have a ham fest, but not just to go out and do like you would think you would do at a ham fest, look at gear and all that. It was an educational ham fest. I was very honored when I was a young 19-year-old to be asked by Bob to come there and talk about my 128-element antenna and my kilowatt of single sideband on 2 meters in 1959. And I go there not really knowing. I'm just a little kid from Marissa, Illinois at that time. The Biltmore Hotel in downtown Dayton had 600 people. That was it. But, oh, buddy, one room was Bill Halligan of Halicrafters. Another room was Bob Drake. Another room was Wes Shum, the guy that really invented single sideband. All these guys teaching us, hams, what's going on and how to do it. And so the Dayton Hamvention grew from that. And what I mean grew from that is the educational aspect. Yes, there was the flea market and it gets bigger. The booths inside get larger. more people, and we can just have a great camaraderie from people all over the world. See, that's the other thing I really like about Dayton. You'll talk to guys in foreign countries on the other side of the globe, but you get to see them there. They come there in just scores. It's the Mecca. But there's something that happens off-site, and this started a few years ago by one of the strongest contesters in the country, if not the world, Tim Duffy. We had Tim on a few shows back, and you really ought to go check that out to see that station that he has. It's unbelievable. We have Tim back tonight. He's going to take a few minutes to tell you about Contest University. Tim, thanks for coming, and let's know more about what is Contest University, where do we go to get involved in all of that. Hello to you, and thanks for being here.
Hello, Bob. Nice to be here on Ham Nation again. This is a tremendous thing that you and Gordon and Leo and everybody associated with the TWIT Network do to bring ham radio through the internet and every week. I look forward to the show myself. Very lucky to be here this week at the K3LR station, and we're really focused on Contest University because, as Gordon mentioned, it's just a short 2 weeks now until Dayton. And Contest University is an effort to really bring radio operating. Most of us that are watching the show, maybe some of the new hams are planning to operate field day. And field day, although some people would say it's not a contest, it's really the biggest operating event that goes on in the United States. And, you know, and that's where a lot of competitive contest operating started with a lot of us, and we'll start again with some new hams this year. So we're very excited that Contest University will not only focus on field day, but also bringing together a lot of people that have experience and having them share that experience in a one-day seminar. It's jam-packed. Bob, we have four classrooms that are running simultaneously. We start at 7 o'clock in the morning, and it goes nonstop until 5 o'clock in the evening on the Thursday before the Dayton Hamvention. So you don't miss any of Dayton. This is an added bonus. All day Thursday, learning about antennas, learning about your station, learning about operating techniques and software, and being able to interact and ask questions about our favorite hobby, which is being on the radio and being competitive and having a lot of fun on the air. So 6 years ago, we started it, and it's gone global, Bob. Not only do we do it in Dayton, which is the United States headquarters for Contest University, but it also occurs in Italy. We just had 300 radio amateurs that participated in Italy in March, and we're looking forward to almost 250 in Dayton this year. So it should be very exciting.
How many people do you have this year that will be involved in this?
There's right now, it's looking like we'll have about 250 come to Dayton. You know, there's 13 professors and about 235 students so far, and there's room for more. And they can go to the website, the contestuniversity.com website, to find out all the information on Contest University in Dayton here in 2 weeks and 2 days.
That's great. And I know that this takes a lot of your time to do that, and I personally appreciate you putting all that forward, because there's a lot of us that don't understand not just contesting, but serious operating. Here are the last couple of days, my gosh, my receivers have been upside down from a couple of huge operations. And I'm sure that that you probably worked all those guys this week. But, oh, man, if you don't know how to work them. I heard a guy today, he kept calling and calling this station. And the station kept saying, I'm listening five up. The guy didn't get it. And it's like, what does that mean? Well, they're using split. And there's a probably a lot of guys listening to us right now going, what are they talking about? And these are things that we need to gradually get into. And it's why I mentioned to so many, you need a good mentor, a good Elmer to help you get the basics of amateur radio. And that's exactly what you guys are doing. You're not there to teach all of the guys that are the major contest. You're there to help people like us that really don't know how to operate our. We want to learn more. That's what I pick out of Contrast University. Isn't that right, Tim?
Absolutely, Bob. You know, there's no question. One of the best presentations, and we've got a lot of very good ones, but we save kind of one of the best ones for last at the end of Contrast University is a 45-minute session by Rob Sherwood. And you know Rob, he's NC0B. And he is really the guru when it comes to radio performance. So, you know, things like operating split and how to maximize the filters in your radio, how to get your microphone tuned properly, you know, and really ICOM was one of the founders, really, of Contest University. Ray Novak stepped up real early and said, you know, we're going to make this available. We're going to do it right. You know, we're going to have. You know, textbooks, you know, Bob, there's a 350 page textbook that comes along with Contest University. And the guys at ICOM, you know, just they step in to make sure that not only do we talk about radios, but also operating techniques. And we all adhere to the contest code of ethics, where the contesters have set down a set of ethics, you know, on how to tune your radio and operating with no more than legal power. And if you say you're not using packet or assistance, that, you know, you abide by the rules. So that's a very important part of what we do at Contest University.
That's wonderful. Well, tell us, we're running the lower third there with it, but there's a lot of people just listening on the podcast. So tell everybody where they need to go to get more information. And boy, the website's really good. I was looking at it earlier today, and tell us where we need to go on our computers to learn where it is, when it is, and all the information, Tim.
Yeah, Bob, it's real easy to get to it. It's Contest University, all one word, contestuniversity.com. And on there, there's a description, there's photos from the past couple of years, registration information, the course outline is there so you can see exactly what goes on. And this all happens at the Crown Plaza in downtown Dayton, which is really the official contesters hotel. But you don't have to stay in the hotel to come to Contest University. We've got parking vouchers, so it won't even cost somebody to park there if they want to come to Contest University. They just need to sign up ahead of time, register right on the website. And then, you know, for four nights there at Dayton, so Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at the Crown Plaza up on the second floor, we host a big hospitality ballroom. I mean, and it gets packed. We do free pizza parties. It's four nights of Q&A and meeting guys from all over the world. And you never know who you're going to bump into that maybe you talk to on the bands. And it's always a great opportunity for new hams to get involved and meet guys and really get deep into operating contesting.
That's really super. And I appreciate you putting this all together. And thanks for bringing the information. We're going to continue it next week. We're going to have Mark on here. And Mark is from the UK. And he does this Contest University in the UK. Is that right?
That's right. You know, Mark was one of the professors at Dayton about 5 years ago. And Mark has also worked with ICOM. And his wife Gemma 2E0WPX, they make a great couple. And so Mark took Contest University to the United Kingdom, and this will be his fourth year doing Contest University in the UK. So we have them in Italy, the United Kingdom. This year will be our first year in Finland, also in Germany at the end of June, and we had one in Brazil last year. Bob, you know, some of these T-shirts that come along with it. I mean, this is great stuff. I've got on one here. You know, you get a bag to go around to Dayton so that you can put all your goodies in the goodie bag. And, you know, there's all sorts of stuff that comes along with Contest University.
Yeah, but the best thing that comes along with Contest University, Tim, is fun and education. And you just cannot deny that. So we hope to see a lot of the Ham Nation audience there. And I'll try to get down there myself on Thursday. We'll see you there. So thanks for being here tonight. And we'll look forward to seeing you in good old Dayton, Tim. K3LR from K9EID.
Okay, Bob. Hey, thanks very much for having us on, and we look forward to Dayton. And there's a button for anybody that has a question about Contest University. We have scholarships for anybody under the age of 25, and all they have to do is click on the Contact Us email button, and I'll respond to them right away, and we'll get them set up and make sure that everybody's Dayton experience is a super one, and they come away learning more and having more fun.
All right. Super duper. That's great. Well, Gordon, I don't know. Will they allow us to go to Contest University? I mean, we need to get down to the novice end of things first, don't we? I mean, what's the deal?
We do. I'm looking for that magic button to push to find out how to operate properly, because you never know who's listening. Tim, a wonderful job, and soon we want to take a look at all that neat gear behind you. And we certainly saw, Tim, that wall full of much-deserved certificates and awards. And, you know, every so often I get some paperwork. This is official paperwork that came to me, Bob, just a couple days ago. I always enjoy it when it says certified mail, Federal Communications Commission Enforcement Bureau. And here it's a warning notice from the commission that went to a slew of Southern California repeater operators who own 1.2 gigahertz repeaters. And I haven't had my 1200 megahertz repeater on the air for 15 years, yet they say that I operate on the air on 1.2 and I'm interfering with the FAA radar. Well, San Francisco had it happen to them with pave paws on 70 centimeters. Now up here at 23 centimeters, Bob, we're getting, and Tim, luckily, hopefully you don't have a radar near you, but everybody in SoCal is getting letters from the enforcement officers saying we're soon to hear more about the FAA's complaint against TAMS. They haven't even got their system up and running yet, and we're already getting the done notices. So a new QSL I'll add to the wall, not my first one, but one from the Federal Communications Commission, certified mail. Bob, back to you.
All right. Oh, golly. I got to tell you about a really cool thing that happened to me Saturday. I'm listening around the bands, and I heard a guy that I knew from Springfield, Illinois. And, of course, I'm in Springfield, Missouri this couple of weeks. And I checked in, and it was a special event station. What is a special event station? Well, every weekend, there are just dozens and scores of them. And it's fun. Some guys, that's all they do, is look around for special event stations. And you work these special events, and they'll have certificates and QSLs, and guys collect all that. And it's a very cool another aspect of ham radio. And I got to work the guy, and then I got to listening. And guys are calling in, and I thought, I'm going to record this because there's a great lesson here. And first of all, this special event happened years ago when Lincoln used to walk 25 miles from New Salem, Illinois to Springfield to get his books from the library to learn to be a lawyer. This is way before his presidency. Well, this past weekend, over 400 Boy Scouts made that same trek across that path from New Salem to Springfield. And they set up a ham radio station, and the Boy Scouts and the guys ran it. And it was really cool. What you're going to see and hear is my transceiver, and you're going to hear Ed, and he was dead on frequency. But then you're going to hear the guy that answered him wasn't on frequency. And, you know, that just drives me nuts when I hear this. I guess those pipe organ tuning ears of mine all these decades. But the guy, I guess he might have been looking at his display and, well, I'm on 00. That doesn't mean you're on the same frequency. They do vary. So take a listen to this and watch. When the guy answers Ed, he comes back and I have to tune down to we were on 00. I had to tune down to dot 90 to clear up his audio. Let's take a listen to this and you'll see what I mean. Go ahead and roller there, Alex.
Station N9L, November 9, Lincoln. And it is commemorating the Lincoln's walk from New Salem, Illinois to Springfield, Illinois. And it is a national scouting event. And we've got anywhere from 400 to 600 scouts out on the same trail that Lincoln took. So back to you. The handle here, by the way, is at Echo Delta. So back to you, WA0AUX, if I've got that call correct. This is November 9, Lincoln.
November 9, Lincoln, WA0AUX. Yeah, you got the call correct there. Ed, very good morning to you. The name here is Marlin. Mexico, America, Romeo, London, Italy, Norway. M-A-R-L-I-N, Marlin.
And you got to see and hear about being on frequency. And one other pet peeve I have. Gordon, you can slap me around for this, but these guys are 10 over 9, big, loud signals, and they got to give all these phonetics. And the guy really didn't understand his phonetics. And when he just said, my name is Marlin, he understood that. So much for phonetics when you're 20 over 9. We don't need all that. We need that when we're in buried in the mud. Was that an S or an F? You know, that a Susan or Frank or whatever. And just my little pet peeve. But what do you think, Gordo? How many times do you hear guys that are not quite on frequency?
Yeah, that certainly happens. And you know, if they attend the big get together in Dayton, Ohio, the Contest University, they'll pick up some of those skills. Plus that up 5 or up 10 kilohertz for those split stations. And the chat room said for our radar deal, it's WARS, worked all radar stations. What do you think?
I think that's good. I know somebody that can really stay on frequency because I work him on 75 all the time from down there in Mississippi. Hey, George, we don't need any Contest University for you, man. You're top dog operator down there. Let's see what you got going with your old solder and smoke today. What you build today?
Hi, Bob Gordo. Well, you know, a few weeks ago, we built some printed circuit boards and burned them using, I think I used a little Sharpie pen to do that with. And there's a better way to do it. And the last few weeks, we've been looking at using CAD programs to draw schematics and print out PC board traces. Well, this week, we're going to take those PC board traces from the computer and actually transfer them to the board. So, Alex, if you've got the video ready to roll. In last week's action-packed episode of Smoke and Solder, I showed you how to use the free ExpressPCB software to create a printed circuit board layout. This week, we're going to look at how to transfer that image onto a PC board, specifically the toner transfer method. Toner contains tiny plastic particles that melt onto the paper when they're exposed to a hot fusing roller. I bought this transfer paper several years ago from Dyne Art Designs. Unfortunately, that company's no longer in business. However, I found a similar product available from PCBFX. This is a thin sheet of special paper that's slick on one side. When you print to it with a photocopier or laser printer, the toner will stick to it, but it doesn't fuse completely into the paper. I did some reading on the internet and discovered that some people were using other papers to transfer images to PC boards. Some even claim that glossy inkjet photo paper will work, while others use glossy magazine paper. Well, we're going to try all three of these. Toner transfer paper can be expensive, so we'll just cut out a small piece to print on. We'll put that in the middle of the page on top of a sheet we've already printed on so we know where to line it up. And we'll tape it on there with some Post-it correction and cover-up tape. That's a paper tape that doesn't adhere very strong, but will run okay through a printer or a copier. Here's the result printed to our transfer paper. Looks good and smooth. I don't see any problems with that. All the traces stuck, and I don't see any obvious holes or pits in there, so we should have a good chance at making this work. I can't say the same thing about the glossy inkjet photo paper, though. You can see here, obviously, there's problems. The toner didn't want to stick to it in several places, and it looks kind of fuzzy, so we won't take this any further. There might be other brands that would work, but this particular one certainly won't. Now, the glossy magazine paper looks like it could work. The toner stuck on there good. We can see the letters sticking behind the traces there, but I don't think that'll be a problem since the ink shouldn't transfer. I'm going to use my wife's steam iron to heat up the board and hopefully transfer the toner to it. We need a surface that won't be affected by the heat, so I'm using an old catalog. And on top of that, I'll put a paper towel. I've already shined up the PC board with a piece of Scotch-Brite. Now I'm going to use a little denatured alcohol to clean it off to make sure that there's no oil on the surface. Also, it's important that we don't touch our fingers to the transfer paper and get oil on there. Now, we'll take the board and put it upside down on top of the transfer, and then we'll take our steam iron, put it on top, and hold a little pressure on it and hope for the best. Abracadabra, and no more PC board. That was unexpected. There it is. It looks a little brown around the edges there. The paper kind of got scorched, but it didn't burn up. Now we'll repeat the process using the glossy magazine paper. Now I'm going to take the board with the transfer paper and dip it into some cool water and let it sit there. They say that after 30 seconds, the paper should just float right off of the board. Well, it's been about 4 minutes, and I don't see anything floating. So I'm going to take a pair of tweezers here and see if I can agitate it around and maybe get the paper to release from the board. The paper has finally slid sideways on the board, so I think we're probably safe to go ahead and peel it off now. We'll just kind of slide it off. There's a few black spots on the paper, and that means that's toner that was not transferred to the board. Let's take a closer look. At first glance, obviously there's some problems, but it's not too bad. We do see a couple little pits there in the ground plane, and I'll take a Sharpie here and kind of cover over those. We can kind of repair them that way. And there's also a trace over here on the side that did not take. The toner actually looks like it slid around in the process. We probably didn't have our heat good and even in this. I'll take the Sharpie and I'll repair that trace too, as well as the outer edge of the ground plane. Now, it may not be pretty, but I believe this will work. Let's try the glossy magazine paper now. Well, that's been sitting in there for about 20 minutes, and nothing floated off on it. And it looks like it's still stuck on there pretty good. Obviously, this one's got some problems. It could have been the paper that we were using, or it could have been the heat, but you can see a lot of traces there. Really messed up on this one. We'll just take some Scotch-Brite and clean this one off and use it for another project. It's time for the acid bath. And while this is almost as fun as watching paint dry, I'm not going to make you endure it today because you've seen me do this before. We'll check back in a few minutes after this has had time to work. At first glance, it looks pretty good. I'll take it now and run it under some cool water for a while to neutralize the acid. Not too bad. We do see what looks like some pits in there, but I held it up to a light and looked through it and didn't see a problem. Our traces that we drew in here seem to have worked. Other than those, everything looks pretty good on here. So the next step now is to take some acetone, which I don't have, so I'll use mineral spirits, and we'll clean the toner off of the board. I do see around one edge there that the acid got a little anxious. And you can see those little black spots on the ground plane there. Those aren't actually pits that go all the way through. It's more like some type of tarnish on there that the acid produced. Our hand-drawn traces seem to have survived too, so I'm going to call this a success. I believe I could do better with a better heat source, and we'll probably try that in the future. Next time, though, I'm going to drill holes in this board, mount the components, and we'll see if the circuit actually works. Well, there you go. That's one way to get the circuit from your computer right onto the PC board. And that's not the only way. So in the future, we'll be looking at one more method to transfer that schematic drawing and the printed circuit board artwork from the computer onto the printed circuit board. Bob, we got some stuff to give away this week. Got a real nice prize over my right shoulder here. This on-air light from cheapham.com. What do you say we give that to someone?
You got it. Let's do it.
All right. Well, our question was, what have I been building here for the last 3 weeks that I actually did the printed circuit board with this time around? And the answer came from Jason Mayer, KC0MVF from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And he said the PC board I was building was actually a frequency divider using a 555 timer from the 1980 edition of Forrest Mims Engineering Notebook. And he is correct. So congratulations, Jason. You won the nice on-air light here made by Sandy's and sold by CheapHam.com. And we want to thank them for donating that prize. And next week, we're going to give away, what will we give away? It's a MFJ telescopic receiver / scanner antenna, they say, has a BNC connector on the end of it. But, you know, this thing's 24 inches long, so you could also measure it to the right length, use it on a handy talkie for 2 meters or for 440 as well. So nice little prize there. And if you'd like to participate, send us an email to hamnationcontest@gmail.com and tell us the answer to this question. There's a very famous electronics formula that probably most everyone here has heard of before, and it's I equal E over R, or current equals voltage over resistance. Email that name to me of what that formula is actually referred to as most often. Send it to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win this antenna.
Hey, those are handy. I have a couple of those, and they're really handy to use on all kinds of projects, so that'll be great. And I must tell everybody, I haven't been back in my Illinois plant for since NAB. We have a whole bunch of prizes there waiting for me to get back. I'll be back in there next Wednesday, and we will send all the 833s and the T-shirts and all that will go out. We have all the winners, and it's my fault because I haven't been there, but I'll be there right before we take off for Dayton, and I'll see that they get out. Hey, George, before we get away, I want to ask you a question. Have you ever seen this site called mobile.ky5u.net? Have you seen that? You probably know this guy.
I do, actually. That's my good friend Charlie Young. He's got that site you just mentioned there, mobile.ky5u.com, and it can run on a computer, or you can run it on your smartphone, which is what he really wrote it for. And, Bob, it's got all kinds of great ham information on there, doesn't it?
Well, I want everybody listening to us to do that. Those go put that in your phone. I guess it'll work on your iPad. It should work on everything you have. Mobile, M-O-B-I-L-E, dot K-Y-5-U, dot net. There it is. Thanks, Alex. You talk about an incredibly educational, informative, and necessary site. Everything from timers to calculators to, if you want to know how long to make a 10-meter antenna. I built a 10-meter antenna for a new ham here in Springfield, and because of Ham Nation, he became a ham. And I built Franklin a KD0 RSJ, by the way. I went down and found the right length and didn't have to bring out any kind of calculator. It told me right there, boom, it's great, everybody. I tell you, if you learned one thing tonight, that's it. And thanks to KY5U for putting that up. This is going to be a great help to everybody. So thanks so much. Do you know about that, Gordo? Do you have that site? Have you seen that?
I did, and it is absolutely on target. And I don't have a little small device that Don and Julian have. They can stick in their hip pocket, but the big laptop does a great job. And we want to say hi to Cheryl and to Amanda. I know, ladies, we didn't have enough Skype entry points to get you on, but we'll be featuring both of you next week. So viewers, Cheryl and Amanda will be back next week. Don, say goodbye.
Goodbye, Don.
Jewel Man.
Goodbye. See you all at Ham Nation. Don't forget, W5KUB, live streaming from Dayton in 2 weeks.
That's right. So we'll see you at the Ham Nation booth at Dayton, Ohio in about 2.5 weeks. Bob, back to you.
You got it. Tom's going to be with us next week. KUB is going to be here. And if you don't know about Tom, you got to learn what he's doing. This guy is incredible. And he's going to bring you all of the Dayton activities live, so you can see it all weekend, and from the Ham Nation booth that's going to be in the Dayton Audio Alley, part of the Hera Arena. So thanks, everybody. It was really great to have everybody on tonight. Learned a lot, and we'll be back here next week, and hopefully we can get to hook up to England and let Mark M0DXR tell us more about Contest University over there. So we're headed off to 7268 with Bill, or 14268 with Mike and Amanda and Cheryl. Get back and look out, because we're all going to be on the nets tonight. Thanks a lot, everybody. Thanks to you, Alex, John, and everybody back in Petaluma for doing such a great job. And we'll see you all next week right here on Ham Nation. Bye-bye for now.